Our meeting is being recorded. Welcome to the July meeting of our new committee, which is Well-Being Reimagined. It's great to see everyone. Thank you, Dr. Tran, for being here. We're looking forward to your presentation in a few minutes. And we will go ahead and get started. Phil Mandeville will be joining us briefly when he gets the link. Thank you, Jenna, for sending that. So I would like to call the meeting to order. We obviously are meeting over Zoom and our meeting is being recorded. And we will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. So I would like to invite Linda to lead us and let me, I still get nervous doing this. Let me try to get the flag up.
Okay, so everybody, if you would just stand and put your hand over your heart. How you doing there, Meredith?
Well, I'm not finding the flag. Let me see. I get this messed up every time. I don't do it well enough.
I'll do it, Meredith. I got it.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Give me one second. All right. Now you should see it.
There we go. All right, ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands,
one nation and a God,
under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Wonderful. Now we are going to have roll call with Vice Chair Patty Mouton.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Linda Cardoza.
Present.
Meredith Chalemi.
Present.
Susan Doback.
Vacationing.
Sherry Geyer is out today. Margaret Huang. No. Elizabeth Jimenez. Phil Mandeville, we'll come back to him. Crystal Miles, Patty Mouton is present. Anne Moudry.
Present.
Phil Orland.
Present.
Thank you. Barbara Sloat.
Present.
Dave Sullivan. Not with us today. Jerry Chang.
Pardon.
Irene Martinez.
Present.
Nicolette Araujo.
Present.
Susan Langley.
Present.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I would like to introduce our guest today, Dr. K.C. Hung. Dr. Hung, would you like to say hello and introduce yourself to our group?
Hello, everyone. I'm certainly privileged to join you folks. I hope to learn from you all, and especially today's guest speaker. I'm a family physician. I've been in practice for 4 decades, and hopefully I have something to contribute also. And I look forward to getting more acquainted with each one of you to serve the elderly or senior citizens in Orange County.
Wonderful, we're so glad that you're here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I don't believe that we have Frank Hernandez with us, do we?
Let's see.
No, I do not see him. I don't think
he has. We'll come back to him later if he joins late. So then without further ado, it's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Dung Trinh. He's gonna be talking to us about the cancer code. And I was able to peek at his LinkedIn profile so I could share a little bit more about him. He's a well-known expert in speaking on preventative health, and he shared his educational and medical knowledge on television, at the Laguna Woods Community Programs, Kiwanis, Religious Centers, Medical Centers, Senior Centers, Alzheimer's, George County, and of course with us today. So we're so glad that he's here. He's on several different advisory boards. He's founded several companies ranging from healthcare to e-commerce, and his passion includes leading teams of physicians, dentists, nurse, and high school students to developing countries to provide healthcare through his nonprofit, Tongue Out. So we are so pleased to have you here. Can't wait to learn from you and see how we can share this information with the Orange County community. So welcome, welcome.
Hey guys, can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I see Patty taking a picture of me. Good to see you guys. It's, you know, if you've ever been to one of my lectures, it's not ever a lecture. It's more of a discussion, a chat where we can just interact on mutually. And we have a small enough group where if you wanted to chime in and ask a question or comment, just, you know, just unmute and feel free to do that. How much time do you have for me to chatterbox here for you?
20 to 30 minutes.
Okay, about half an hour or so. Good. All right. And by the way, does it look like I have, do you like my background?
Yeah, it looks like you're in an outdoor area, like on a patio overlooking a...
Yeah, like with cars going behind me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not even a background. I'm actually just at a real life hanging out patio.
Oh yeah, it looks great.
I think it's a, I think that's Coastline Community College behind me. It's kind of like my outdoor office. I hang out here quite a bit and do work, and there's Wi-Fi here, and there's like a coffee bar downstairs if you ever wanted to hang out and do work. But anyway, we're gonna talk a little bit about cancer today. And you know, nothing that you guys have ever not known a lot about. How many of us here have been affected by cancer one way or another? I know that most of us either know someone or have had, you know, health histories ourselves with this. Cancer in Orange County is the number two cause of death, right behind heart attacks. And number three is Alzheimer's, actually, in Orange County. So let me ask you a really simple question, guys. What is cancer? What is cancer? Anybody want to unmute chat?
Irregular cell growth.
Okay.
Bad cells,
irregular cell growth. Okay. All right. Is it simply that?
Is it opportunistic kinds of growth where it is parasitic kind of?
Okay, parasitic, right? It feeds on things, I guess, to grow somehow. All right. Yeah, cancer isn't always a very definitive. You know, when we ask for a definition, it's not always definitive, but like, this is it. Like, if I were to ask you, what is heart disease? It's pretty simple. It's clogging up the arteries, right? If I were to ask you, you know, what's a stroke? A stroke is basically, there's two types of strokes. It's either a clogged artery or like a bleed in the brain, right? It's very simple, straightforward when we ask about conditions like heart disease and strokes. You know, what is it? It's something's clogged. When I ask about the question, you know, what is cancer? It's a little bit more vague, right? It's maybe a cell that's gone haywire or is it a mutation or what's driving the second cause of death, right? In the United States. I would say probably a cancer is maybe it's a cell that doesn't die when it should. How does that sound? Does that sound good? Is it true that every cell in our body has a time of birth and a time of death that's designated for that cell, right? I mean, cells normally don't live forever. For example, how long does a skin cell live? Does anyone know how long a skin cell lives? Is it years, months?
Seven years?
Really?
Months.
A skin?
No.
Months.
It seems like we're constantly shedding them, so I would imagine it's not a real long lifetime.
Okay, yeah. It's probably a shorter amount of time because we're constantly shedding our skin cells. And for some of us, we want to shed it faster with like the facial, right, than others. Right? Does anyone know how long a red blood cell live? A red blood cell.
About 42 days.
Ooh, that's kind of precise there, Patty. Right? How long?
To about 4 months.
Okay, Dr. Hung says about 4 months. All right. So a red blood cell lives about 3 months, about 90 days. Okay. How do we know that? How do we know that? Anyone has ever get a blood test called the hemoglobin A1C? Mm-hmm. What does that blood test measure?
Your sugar in the last 3 months. An average.
Yes, your average blood sugar in the last 3 months. And so it's a measure of diabetes, you know, detection of diabetes, pre-diabetes, that hemoglobin A1C we all check, right? Why is it in the last 3 months that's the average and not the last 3 years or the last 3 weeks?
Well, maybe the sugar leaves.
Well, the way we measure the severity of sugar or the average sugar amount in our body is that the sugar is attached and it hitchhikes on the red blood cell. It's a hitchhiker on our red blood cell that floats around in the blood. And so our red blood cell lives on average 3 months and then it dies and then it dies and a new red blood cell is formed. So that's how we determine your average blood sugar, because it's just a hitchhiker. We're looking at your red blood cell actually and the number of sugar that's on there that's hitchhiking. And that's how we determine, right? So every cell in your body has a predetermined birthday and death day, and it only lives for so long, right? Up to a certain amount of time. So there are certain cells, your liver cells lives about a certain amount of time, your pancreatic cells, your kidney cells, your white blood cell lives for so long and then it dies, right? It's predetermined, and your red blood cell as well. And what determines how long that cell lives before it dies? What is inside a cell that tells it it's time to die? Does anyone know?
The lysosome?
The lysosome?
Lysosome. Well, isn't Patty, you've been taking some cell biology.
The genetic code.
Back in the olden days.
Yeah. Very great. Very great. The answer is the genetic code, right? But close enough, Patty. Lysosome, genetic code, you know, close enough. Right? So inside your cells is the nucleus. And the nucleus is all your genes in it, right? Right, not the 501 genes and the other genes, but it's your genetic code. And your genetic code, your DNA, right? Your DNA is what tells the cell it's time to die. It also tells the cell it's time to divide and grow, right? You should be growing once, it's time to duplicate and let's grow, or it's time to stop growing and die, right? Your DNA tells your cells that. So in simplicity, a cancer cell, for some reason, isn't dying when it should. Does that kind of make sense to you guys?
Yeah.
A cancer cell is a cell that should be dead, should be dying, but it refuses to. It's not playing the game. It's not playing its role, right? So this is why we have cancer mass. Like, for example, breast cancer, you get a mass in the breast. It is a mass of breast cells that refuses to die. That's why you get a mass. A lung cancer, right? How do we find it? It is a mass in the lung. It is a bunch of lung cells that just refuses to die.
So, doctor, are these mutant cells?
Perfect, perfect. So that is where this leads up to, right? Why does that cancer refuse to die? It refused to die because its genetic code, the DNA, is not doing its job. The DNA has been damaged through some type of mutation, right? And in that mutation, it damages the DNA's role in telling the cancer cell to stop growing, to die. So that death right? That little switch, that death switch is broken. Death switch is broken in a cancer cell. It doesn't die, so it keeps growing. Does that make sense to you guys so far?
Yes.
Making sense so far?
You say broken, but isn't there a natural tendency for anything living to resist death? So I'm wondering if that's just an opportunity for the cell to say, hey, I don't want to die.
Great question. Well, in the natural order of things, we as a total, an entire organism, right? Humans, bugs, cats, dogs, right? Our will is to survive. And so you're absolutely correct. But from a cellular part, from the actual cell itself, every cell is destined to die. Why is that? Because you cannot make new cells until you replace an old cell. Otherwise, we'll be giants, right? We'll be like gigantic year after year. We'll have entire large livers, large spleens, every organ's large, right? So in the natural order of things, to make new things, to allow for new cells to be birthed, old cells need to die, right? That's how things are created. And so we go through these mutations. And the question is, what causes a gene to be damaged? What causes our DNA to be damaged in the first place? Right? What causes these mutations, guys? Any thoughts on that?
Stress?
Okay, stress to the cells?
Environmental pollutants like Agent Orange or radioactivity or other toxins in the water or the soil?
Yes.
Yeah. We call these carcinogens.
What about a family predisposition?
Yes, through genetics and hereditary. Yes, that can obviously play a role as well in passing on mutations over time. But even a larger role, guys, is really just carcinogens, right? Carcinogens is anything that promotes cancer growth. And if you look at the details of that, carcinogens is basically anything that causes a mutation in our DNA code that causes the death switch to turn off, right? In a cell, you're turning off that death switch that allows that cell to live forever. So a carcinogen, it's really a toxin, you know, in the air, in the ground, in whatever we've been exposed to, pollution. But carcinogens is really in our diet. The American diet. Right? The American diet. And why do I say that? Well, did you know that by simply trying to identify mutations alone, and we have done it for the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years, we try to capture and stop cancer by trying to identify the mutations of cancer and then try to develop medications to somehow fix these mutations, right? To stop these mutations. That has been done through projects such as the Human Genome Project. Ever heard of the Human Genome Project, where we try to map out every gene in our body, right? There's actually a specific project for cancer. It's called the Cancer Genome Atlas that we try to develop, very specific for cancer, to map out everything with mutations that causes cancer within our genome. Now, how successful were we?
That again, what's the name of that cancer genome? What is it?
Cancer Genome Atlas.
Atlas.
It's like a map, right? And here's the problem, guys. We have been looking for cancer mutations for the last 20, 30 years. Why have we not stopped cancer yet?
Our diet hasn't changed.
In-N-Out.
In-N-Out Burger? No, don't say that. No, I actually have to say that, you know, the American diet, including hamburgers, pizzas, and everything else we eat, right, is driven by simply carcinogens. with maybe the exception of In-N-Out. That is maybe the only exception in the American diet. It's physician approved. Actually, maybe not since you're recording this, right? But
you know, especially the drinks, you know, I mean, you get the weekly ads for sale and, you know, a full page of, you know, sales on the soft drinks and sugar drinks. I mean, you don't even have to eat much, but, you know, keep drinking in this hot weather and you just toxins are just poured.
Yes. So here's something that's interesting. I've been following the Cancer Genome Atlas projects. And what we found out is this. Even within one cancer, even within the same cancer, we are finding thousands of mutations in the same cancer. Thousands of mutations. And so my question is, where do we even start to create a medication to try to stop this? Right? And what we have realized, and the reason why cancer is still the number two cause of death in the United States, is that we cannot stop it by looking and chasing after mutations. I mean, look at COVID. By the time you find something for the alpha virus, there's the beta virus. By the time you try to catch the beta virus, there's now the delta virus?
And lambda.
And now we got like lambda behind delta. Right? We can't stop cancer by trying to catch the latest mutation. I mean, look at just one virus. You're not going to stop a virus by catching the latest mutation. By the time you find it, the next mutation is here, right? Lambda is here. So something interesting about cancer is that cancer cells are defective cells. They're defective because they've got mutations. They're broken, right? They're broken cells. Cancer cells all have something very interesting. They have defective mitochondria. What is the purpose of a mitochondria? Does anyone know? Why does a mitochondria exist?
Energy for the cells, isn't it? ADP? I can't remember anymore. It's been a long time.
I think it divides the cells.
Yes, ATP, energy. So the mitochondria is a battery. It's a cell's battery. It provides energy.
The powerhouse.
What we have learned about cancer cells is that they all have broken batteries, defective batteries. Cancer cells do not produce energy very well. They do not produce energy very well. As a matter of fact, every cell needs what to make it work. What is needed for a cell to function? For energy?
Glucose,
sugar, right? Sugar is the energy source, right? For a cell. The cell takes in sugar from the bloodstream, right? Here's, you eat something, the bloodstream, you know, there's sugar in the blood. By the way, how does sugar get into the cell from the bloodstream? Does anyone know?
Transported by insulin.
Ooh, Margaret, you're good. Yes, insulin is the doorman that opens the door. Insulin's the doorman that opens the door to allow sugar to go into the cell, right? And then the cell uses that sugar for energy, right? It goes through the mitochondria and you make ATP. ATP is a unit of energy. Are you guys following me so far?
Yeah.
So here we go. The cancer cell has broken mitochondria. It doesn't use sugar very well. So in order for cancer cells to grow and divide, does it need more sugar or less sugar to allow it to grow?
More.
More sugar because it's broken. It needs more sugar to feed it. Right? It needs more sugar to feed it for it to grow. A regular human cell that's healthy, has a healthy mitochondria, can use sugar, but when sugar is not available, what else can a cell use for energy when sugar is not available? Anyone know? What's the other source of energy? besides sugar?
Glycogen in the liver.
Glycogen, yes, but glycogen is sugar.
Carbs.
Muscle.
Carbohydrates.
Fat.
Right. Yes, those are all macro, right? Macro molecules. But the unit of energy, right, when you break it down, the alternative to sugar is ketones.
That's from the
ketones.
Fat.
Yes, from the breakdown of fat, right? Ketones. So when a healthy cell doesn't have sugar, it uses fat to make energy. It breaks down fat. Fat becomes ketones. Ketones go into your cell, and ketones is used for energy. Make sense so far, guys?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. Cancer cell cannot use ketones. It only uses sugar.
Oh.
Right? It only uses sugar because it's broken. Let me connect something with you guys here. The American diet, how often do we eat a day?
3 times.
I see 3 times, and Frank has 5 fingers up.
24 hours.
24 hours, Margaret. Right? The American diet, there's breakfast, there's lunch, there's dinner. Do we stop there?
No. Coffee break.
No. People love their snacks of donuts for snacks.
The snacks?
Chip.
So, how many of you guys have snacks between breakfast and lunch? Anybody? All right. Gene does. How many of you guys have snack between lunch and dinner? Anyone?
I learned not to do that.
Gene does. Right. How many of you guys have snack after dinner or after dinner dessert?
Well, people do that.
How come I see Gene's hand up and everything?
Because right? Gene loves food.
The American diet is a diet that we feed ourselves food throughout the day. And because the American diet is a diet that's high in carbohydrate, isn't it? Breads, pasta, rice, pizza, potatoes, hamburgers, hot dogs, sugar. When do we not have carbs in a regular American diet? What does carbs break down to, guys?
Sugar.
Do you see how I'm trying to start to link things here with cancer?
Yeah.
A cancer cell needs energy because it has a broken mitochondria. The American diet is a diet that keeps feeding our cancer cells. We always have insulin on board, opening the cell, right? Opening the door. But why is insulin always there? Because sugar is always there. Every time sugar is there.
Fasting takes away that mechanism, right?
100%. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Because of the frequency of our diet and the types of food that we eat, we love to feed cancer. It is why it is the number 2 cause of death in America. Right? We cannot chase after mutations. We've already seen that. We cannot chase after, variants like we're trying to do now with Delta in coronavirus, right? If you think of cancer as a tree, as a blossoming, flourishing tree. Every tree starts with a seed, right? The seed of cancer is a mutation. But the tree cannot grow with just a seed alone. What does it need?
Water.
Soil.
Water, fertilizer, light, soil, right?
Right.
We cannot chase cancer by looking for mutations. We have to chase cancer by addressing the soil. Who's in control of that soil?
We are.
You are.
The person in their budget.
right? Yeah, we are in control of our soil, guys. Nutrition, diet, what do we feed it? How often do we feed it? Right? Cancer is a tree that needs seed and soil. You may not control the mutation. You may not be in control of your genetics, but you are in control of your soil. You are in control of how much sugar is there to feed the cancer cells. You are in control of how much carbs you eat. You're in control of the frequency, how often you eat, right? It is the soil that allows the seed to flourish and grow. We are in control of our soil, right? Mm-hmm. We are in control of our soil. And so I leave you with that. I leave you with that. Obviously, I give these lectures. They're like an hour lectures. They're an hour and a half lectures. I can go on forever, right? With the science behind it. Why is it? And I'll leave you one last thought. Did you know that cancer is correlated with obesity?
Yes. Yes. Right?
If you type in Google cancer and obesity, under the American Cancer Association, you're going to realize that there are 13 cancers that are linked to obesity. Why is cancer linked to obesity? Is it simply because cancer doesn't like fat people and therefore you're prone to that, right? Why is cancer linked to obesity?
Over sugar, too much sugar in the diet that leads to weight gain or poorly managed weight. And that's probably also why people that are overweight become more prone to diabetes type 2 because they are not metabolizing sugar appropriately. They've overtaxed their insulin mechanism.
100%, Patty.
Wow.
Cancer is linked to obesity because what drives obesity is our diet, our lifestyle, our carbs, our sugar. And while we're getting obese from that, we are feeding 13 cancers. That's why it's linked. Because it needs the sugar to divide and grow. So enjoy the rest of your meetings, guys. It's good to see you.
Dr. Trinh, I have a question for you.
Yes.
You know, that relates to your other lectures that I have heard that yes. You said that, you know, it causes this generalized body systems inflammation too, you know, causes generalized inflammation, which compounds the body's immune fighting mechanisms for the coronavirus too. So we have,
yes.
The high death rates on people with the same theory, the same principle of high inflammation. This is related to that. What is that? The immunology, you said the British study was done about the glucose in your system damages the vessels, the immune system.
Yes, nothing's in a silo. Everything is connected. Absolutely right, Margaret.
Well, thank you for your wonderful wisdom of sharing. I mean, you know, it's wonderful.
I have a
our committee question. Has to figure out how to get this information out to the rest of Orange County. This is certainly inspiring and helpful.
I have a question. Can you explain the relationship between antioxidants and free radicals?
Yes. A free radical is an oxygen looking for a home, right? Because we have a lifestyle that promotes these radicals, right? Prooxidants. And when oxygens look for a home, it bounces around throughout the molecules and it knocks off and damages molecules, it damages genes and genomes, right? So that's why the prooxidative process is a process that leads to inflammation and damage. An antioxidant is a molecule that soaks up that free radical. It takes away that free radical. And in taking away that free radical, it neutralizes the damage that's done. And in doing that, it decreases inflammation in your body.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for your excellent presentation and your expertise. We really enjoyed having you with us today, Dr. Trinh.
Take care. Have a good day.
Yeah, you as well. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I would like to talk about that a little bit more during our discussion time, but right now I want to circle back to item number 5, our Office on Aging update with Frank Hernandez, because I see he is now in the Zoom.
Thank you. Sorry about getting into the meeting late. I came back from a CPR training, so schmitzen. Yeah, so at the present time, we do not have any classes scheduled, but we did reach out and we were able to update two of our leaders. So with the chronic disease self-management program. So we anticipate to have more classes being popping up in our California Healthier Living website for participants that can attend the class virtually. I'm also going to be conducting a coach training for Matter of Balance coaches that can deliver the class virtually. That's still in the process. And I'm still trying to reach out to all my volunteers to make sure that they are up to date with their CDA training. So if you know of our partners and they are still active, to remind them that we're getting close to the deadline to making sure that we have the CDA training under our belt so we can move forward with our volunteers. Any questions?
Yes, now that the senior centers are starting to reopen, what are the plans for resuming the in-person classes with the senior center reopenings?
Yeah, so I was working with Marco, and at the present time, we're trying to follow the CDC's guideline. And most of the CDC guidelines, from what I talked to Marco, is still up in the air because of things that are, you know, coming up. So it's kind of hard time to say that things are going to go back in person when we're having a variance that is increasing. So right now it's kind of a wait and see. So I'm waiting to see what Marco and management says and what we're able to do relating to the CDC's guidelines. So don't know yet.
To be determined.
That's right.
Thank you, Frank. Any other questions for Frank about the Healthier Living programs and the education? All right, thank you for being here. You're welcome to stay, or if you have to excuse yourselves, we understand that too. All right, so now we are going to go to number 7, chair items. Our new business is master plan goal alignment with our two committee goals. And I see that Susan Doback has joined us, even though she's vacationing. So Susan, I'm not sure if you're able to unmute yourself and share a little bit about the impact hearing that you went to virtually with the new master plan accountability group.
I'm here. Thank you very much, Meredith. So last week I attended via Zoom a meeting organized by the California Department of Aging and chaired by their director, Kim McCoy-Wade. The purpose of the meeting was to introduce the recently formed Impact Committee and to discuss the committee's mission and how they're going to achieve that mission. The members on that committee are Dr. Torres Gill, who you might remember spoke to us at the SCAC meeting a couple of weeks ago, the head of Domestic Workers of America, the California State Department of AARP, head of Disability Rights in California, director of the San Bernardino County Department of Aging, executive director of National Justice on Aging, California State Policy Director for the Alzheimer's Association, and Executive Director of the California Pan-Ethnic Health Network, as well as Director Kim McCoy-Wade. This diverse group was chosen because of their expertise, their shared values, their abilities, their experience to get things and the way they get things done. With a deep focus on the five goals set forth in the master plan, the Impact Committee is to offer advice and accountability. Are we achieving the goals set forth in the master plan? What things are not working? The transportation section in the master plan has been criticized. How do we make it better? Impact Committee will seek clarity on what's in the budget for each goal. Work will be done in work groups and the committee will be overseers. There will be special advisors in the governor's office to hone in on the specific areas. All will make sure the master plan pivots based on current events if necessary. It was frequently said during the meeting that the Impact Committee is in place to make sure we are moving the needle and goals are implemented. Very soon, Director McCoy Wade will present a 6-month, 10-page progress report on the master plan, and it'll be available on the agency website. Specific to the budget, there is $3 billion for home and community-based services in the new budget, more money and potential resources than ever before. There will be more initiatives because there is more money. The $3 billion spend is apportioned as follows: $1.5 billion for legislative and on the legislative side and $1.5 billion on the administrative side. Committee members called out these items relative to the plan that they thought were the most important. One was homelessness, the 50 to 70 year olds who cannot afford housing. The second thing was attendant workforce, increased wages and training. The third thing was Alzheimer's daycare for Alzheimer's patients, attention to family caregiving and intergenerational caregiving. The fourth was nursing home reform, then long-term care insurance, especially for the missing middle. Climate change, which impacts health quality via air and heat. Housing, affordable housing has a limited lifespan. What do we do when affordable housing goes away after a certain number of years? Employment, help people continue to work as they age. System navigation, making it easier for seniors to access information on what's available instead of multiplying options. Behavioral health, nothing available to meet this need. More equity in this area. Technology, how do we improve data collection, demographic information, policies, making sure policies do not overlap with what's already in place. Seek agency pollination. For example, health works with Human Services Agency and housing. I'm sorry, Health and Human Services Agency and housing will work together. Statewide Older American Database is in work, a statewide database to identify senior demographics, inequities, benchmarks, services, and trends, all of which lead to transparency, targeted spending, and better services. The database will help those involved better know what they're aiming for. The database will help master plan measurable outcomes. The challenges for this committee and for the master plan in general is communication and coordination among all entities involved, because there are so many entities, county agencies, legislators, partners, committees, work groups, nonprofits, even Congress. Some groups work in silos, independent and out of contact with others. Improved communication and coordination will be attempted. The distribution of short bulleted reports as consensus among Impact Committee members is reached on goals and actions. Find people who are intersecting people in the various entities, those who work in multiple groups. Organize aging hubs to focus on departments of aging locally. Have a list of 6 general questions to ask after every action. One, for example, could be, have we been equitable? In my summary, the Impact Committee's responsibility is to propel the work of the master plan forward. Sorry for the background noise.
That's okay. Thank you so much, Susan, for attending that 3-hour long meeting. listening for us, writing out the notes, which we can share, and making a report to our group today. Very fabulous. And I think that accountability and oversight and how is this actually going to work is so important moving forward. Any questions of Susan or any thoughts, feel free to share. Committee members. I think you must have given a really good summary. Thank you so much.
Or lost them in the translation.
A lot to digest. Go ahead.
I said it's a lot to digest.
Yeah, Susan, are you going to give that report at the regular meeting?
I sent it to Elaine Genoway, and so perhaps she'll ask me to do that, but I can send it to all of you. I have your emails, and I can send it to you, and then you can look at it closely and really, you know, really get an attempt to digest it.
It's probably the most informative report that I've ever encountered, so thank you very much, Susan.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Hi, Susan. This is Frank, the health educator. So is the community education or getting the community back to getting a little bit more versed in community education built into the master plan there?
You know, they didn't get very specific on what they intended to do. They just sort of outlined these areas to focus on. And so I think that you know, your role or Erica's role in this whole thing will be in as part of those aging hubs. And then you can give your input if you want to have more on education. But I think that once, you know, I think the whole idea that technology is not seamless, particularly for seniors, is going to be a big thing in the master plan. As we saw with the vaccination, you know, seniors had a hard time getting that information. So I think that's going to be a really, really important part. And I mean, I think the statewide database is going to help everybody, you know, get all the information they need, be able to look at the services, look at who's accessing the services or the education or whatever, Frank. I'm sorry if I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I just anecdotally, I know that there is a lack of knowledge, especially for the disenfranchised community, that are just falling further and further behind with technology that left them in the dark when it came to getting those resources or the community education. So
exactly.
We're making a proposal to the Board of Supervisor to expand the chat program so that we have even more Orange County older adults that could get a loaded device to learn how to use it and then access telehealth and other resources. So definitely that digital divide is top of mind.
Maybe we can look at the more disenfranchised community to make sure that their voice is being heard. So making sure that you're reaching out to the really vulnerable community.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely.
All right.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, Susan, for that excellent report. And I know that everyone looks forward to getting the written version too. So hand of applause for Susan. You can't see us, but you're getting kudos. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now I'm going to try to share my screen again for our next chair item, which is that master plan alignment. And I hope that I'm going to make it work. Tell me if I did it.
You did it.
All right. So now I need to do transitions, animation, slideshow from the beginning. So one of the things that I thought might be helpful is to have visuals. I know that when I'm attending Zoom meetings, sometimes just listening isn't enough. So I put together just a brief PowerPoint. I met with Susan, and I actually had a meeting with Jean. So thank you so much, Jean, and with Elaine, and I got a clearer understanding as a fairly new chair of how this is all gonna work. So our advisory flow is that we have the ideas of our committee that we're gonna be coming up with, and that we kind of percolate those and frame those so that every March during the SCAC workshop, we have kind of vetted and thought out ideas to share. And then out of that workshop, The SCAC Executive Committee and the Office on Aging make recommendations to the Board of Supervisors on behalf of older adults. Gene, let me know if I'm getting this right.
Oh, you're spot on right now. Looks good. I like the graphics.
Great. So that just kind of frames what we're doing. And then I also wanted to write out the two goals that our new Wellbeing Reimagined Committee is overseeing out of the master plan. We are assigned goal 2, which is Health Reimagined, which is written out like this. We will have access to the services we need to live at home in our communities and optimize our health and quality of life with the target of close the equity gap in and increase life expectancy. And then our other goal for this committee that we don't want to forget about is caregiving that works. We will be prepared for and supported through the rewards and challenges of caring for aging loved ones. And as I've been listening to more webinars about the master plan, we want to consider the family caregivers, informal caregivers, but also do we have in Orange County sufficient caregivers in terms of healthcare providers, professional caregivers as well? And Susan mentioned the attendant workforce, and we've talked about that at SCAC. Are there enough caregivers in Orange County? I know Dr. Torres-Gill talked about that, to care for our aging population. So I wanted to see if we could have a brainstorm, and we'll continue this on throughout the year, but where do we want to start with our two goals, Health Reimagined and caregiving that works? I thought that it might be a great idea, and happy and hopeful to get feedback, that we would pick one or two different items for Health Reimagined and for caregiving that work, and maybe even work in subcommittees, informal subcommittees, to come up with ideas before March rolls around so that we can submit them for the SCAC workshop. I know for Health Reimagined, there's been talk about the Blue Zone project. We had the great presentation at SCAC, and then Phil Orland and I met with Lauren again. But that needs more research and work if we wanted to propose that as like an environmental health project for Orange County, similar to what other geographic areas have done. And then caregiving that work, I just had an example of figuring out what caregiving resources we have in Orange County, figuring out gaps in services and needs, and hearing more about that. So that's kind of how I thought we might be able to work going forward with this alignment strategy. I'm open for feedback, conversation. What do you think, and where should we go from here?
So are you, when it comes to the goals brainstorm, are we now looking to do objectives for those goals? And if we do, then we want to make sure that those are really detailed as far as objectives and what you plan to achieve by how much and by when.
So well, our objective is to, in my opinion, create 1, 2, or 3 page kind of idea sheets that we're going to bring to that SCAC workshop on the different subcategories of Health Reimagined and caregiving that works. We're not actually instituting programs, but we're coming up with ideas to suggest based on what we're hearing and learning about.
I don't think we'll be doing action steps, in other words.
Okay.
No.
So just right now it's just idea gathering.
And research. So for example, with the Blue Zones project, everyone was very jazzed about it. It's wonderful, but how do we peel back the next layer of that onion as a committee to find out what would the cost be? What are some more of the details? What are some ideas about how this might be considered by the Board of Supervisors for Orange County?
Yeah, I apologize. I don't remember the Blue Zone project.
I don't think that you go to the general SCAC meeting, so that's probably why she spoke at that meeting.
Can you give me a little bit the 30-second elevator speech? That way I can kind of throw another 2 cents in.
I cannot, because I was out sick that day. So I would rather have someone else give the 30-second speech. I know, Gene, you even came out with the handout for your family.
Yeah, I did, but Patty has her hand up. Patty, go for it.
Okay, good.
Well, the Blue Zones are geographic areas on the planet where people seem to have longer and healthier longevity. And so what the Blue Zone project sought to uncover is what are these people doing that gives them not only long life, but long healthy life. And it has to do with lifestyle, diet, exercise, purpose in life, all of these major core issues. And up in the Pacific Palisades Torrance area, around one of their senior centers and clinics, they have implemented a Blue Zone kind of project to improve people's health demonstrably by getting people to quit smoking, to reduce drinking, to change their diet, to up their exercise. And it's having some, you know, very, very positive outcomes. But there's a cost involved in bringing the project in to a specific area. There's parameters.
Billions and millions.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot of money, but it does definitely cause positive outcomes in health and well-being.
So those Blue Zones obviously had some goals and objectives and entities that were able to provide additional resources to make sure that they had all the need, the things that they needed covered?
Well, actually, no. The Blue Zones geographically throughout the world happened organically. Okay. So, you know, places like Special Island in Japan, you know, different spots. Loma Linda, California.
Loma Linda, right.
Okinawa, right. I couldn't remember the name of Okinawa. Parts of the Mediterranean area. So specific Sardinia. Areas are, was it Sardinia? I was going to say Corsica, but you're probably right.
Sardinia.
So these areas just happened organically with how people live their lives over, you know, periods of several generations. So they didn't do anything specific other than what they do naturally. In Pacific Palisades area, then that was very specific with goals and objectives, outcome measurement, and direction.
Okay.
So, for example, yeah. Orange County doesn't have a naturally occurring Blue Zone. So we would have to do it intentionally.
They actually did, but it's not called the Blue Zone. It was the individuals that came from Mexico that continued the healthy lifestyle and eating well that they brought from Mexico, that they were able to stave off a lot of the long-term chronic health issues compared to the individuals that were grown up, that grew up in the United States that took on the Western diets that kind of made it the Blue Zone of that version of it.
Well, but it was much more than just diet. Diet was a major player, but there was a lot more issues, particularly dealing with support bases, family support. So that would probably still count for the Hispanic group because they were very close-knit. They had a support base. They had someone to fall back on if there was hard times or issues. And that's what they found because I thought it was, what's the other one? Loma Linda was interesting. Well, it turns out that they have a particular religious group there
Adventist.
In numbers.
Adventist. Yeah.
Yes. And the Seventh-day Adventist, right. And that they watch what they eat. They pay attention. They're a family support group. They take care of each other. So all these things kind of coming together in groups created this longevity. So it can be done. And I'm not sure we necessarily have to go the full Blue Zone project, you know, thing. If we just had more awareness. Hey, here we know that works, but it seems to be the greater the numbers, the better effects that we have.
And talking to the person, Lauren, that runs the Blue Zones up in the beach areas in LA, that's a lot of programming as well that takes place so that people have community access. They start to get to know each other. They're gathering in smaller groups. They're exercising together. So it does take oversight if we wanted to recommend that it's more official. It's just an idea, but we do need to figure out as a group kind of where we want to start heading in preparation because summer is going to go by and then fall and March will be here before we know it.
Yeah, and our life takes over. That's the problem, Meredith. We always run across that. These aren't things that we don't know. Like that was an excellent presentation on cancer, but can anyone tell me that they didn't know that eating, you know, heavy sugars and carbs is not good for us. We know that. Then why don't we do it? Because we're weak creatures. We just, you know, we follow the path of least resistance.
Yes.
And I think that was the distinction that Lauren was trying to make about the Blue Zones is that it's more global environmental communities. So it's lifestyle. Not the individual having to make this decision for themselves all day long. There's that group effort.
Okay. Right, making sure that everybody has the support system.
And the motivation and the accountability and the relationships that make you want to do these things.
The blue zone is a marathon, not a sprint.
Right.
And so once people have the information, they can implement the guidelines as that they feel comfortable to do.
And it's a lifestyle commitment. Yeah, I mean, these communities, their children are raised this way. So it's just handed down. They know the path they're going to go. And that's, it can't just be one family starting here or there.
Well, you know what? I mean, in our society, there's just freedom is too much freedom. I was just talking to a family about the whole family, the parents and the adult kids, 22-year-old, two of them, and 8-year-old. And they all came down, 6 of them, with COVID around Christmas time. So I was recently just reiterating that if they took the vaccine, yeah, the father and the son did, the mother didn't, and the daughter, who's 22, did not take the vaccine. And then I was talking about the importance, and she says, oh, it's personal choice, you know. So in our society, the freedom just it's ruining everybody in a way, you know, because
I think it's overwhelming.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but
seeing that Colette has her hand raised also.
Meredith, I would like to make a motion that we take the blue zone project on in its ideas and present it at the for Orange County for the SAC, and then let's look at caregiving.
I would second that.
Do I hear a second?
So
I'll second that motion.
Well, discussion. I see Nicolette's got her hand up and Dave's got his hand up. I'm sure they want to chime in.
Thank you. So I think how we got started on this was the more general concept, where we were talking about the concept of how do we take and formulate goals in order to present them next March, and how do we take and not only present a general goal, and I know, Frank, I think you were kind of getting at this, we're looking at not only presenting a general goal, but presenting enough meet around that goal such that there can be educated decision making as that goal is suggested and progresses through the process of hopefully coming to fruition. So I'm kind of going all the way back to the beginning and saying, yes, I think it would be a great idea if we were to divide up in groups and do that work, because I think that was the question that was initially on the table. And so I just kind of wanted to bring us back to that.
If I may, I think I like the ideas that the goals are great, and they're great things that have something to achieve to or to strive for. And you're right, we need to also put some meat to this goal. And if we're going to go break into subcommittees, maybe we can also get some key stakeholders that might be able to chime in creating the goals and activities that will resonate from the ground up as well as from the top down through a healthcare agency. So if we're going to look at the blue zone or something similar to that, maybe we can have a subgroup that can say, okay, these are the strengths and weaknesses for this one or two goals that we might consider. And so once we bring it back to the SCAC team, or the health and nutrition SCAC, that we'll have a more informed decision and meat and potatoes that you can say, okay, here's where we're proposing this to the Board of Supervisors, where we already have the resources within HCA and OCCR and all the all the entities that are at their disposal. I mean, not all the Board of Supervisors are well informed on what programs are out there underneath their wing. Being a healthcare agency employee for the longest time, Board of Supervisors sometimes throws, you know, spaghetti to the wall and see what sticks without having a good game plan. So making sure that the frontline workers are, you know, included in this so that they can chip away and provide a more meat and potatoes information to provide it to the Board of Supervisors.
Jean, what do you think? I mean, we need to rely on you for guidance here because
there's a lot to be said for that. If you picture the supervisors, much like our state legislators, you don't bring half-baked projects or work. They're going to want a thumbnail overview, and then they're going to want what's the cost and who's going to implement it. So those are the things that we would need to bring to them. And I can tell you right out of the gate, if we said the Blue Zone project, immediately they're going to go, well, look at that, that's millions of dollars. It's not really the Blue Zone project. It's the philosophy of the Blue Zone project. What was that philosophy? And so then how do we break that down? And that's where these subcommittee groups, the working groups would come in to bring a completed, wrapped up blueprint for the county to say, okay, I see how we can do that. I see who's going to be in charge, who's going to control what the cost is, and maybe the Council of Aging, you know. So, you know, everybody's on board. So he's absolutely right. We need to do that first and make sure we do the heavy lifting. That's our job. We're going to flush all this out and say, yep, this is a good one. Or, you know, that's going to be a little expensive. So I think Blue Zone is a good one to cut our teeth on, but it's going to have to go to these subcommittees to flush this stuff out. And how we keep in mind, we want to give that the finished product to the county. That's what we want. So they can say, okay, plug it in.
And at the same time, Frank and Jean, like you're saying, it needs to be robust at the same time. No one's going to read a 10-page document either.
No.
So.
No. The shorter, the better.
It has to be short and impactful. So I heard a good discussion. I heard a first and a second from Phil and Phil to consider the Blue Zones and maybe the Blue Zones philosophy, if we don't want to do the Blue Zones in and of itself. Do we want to... show of hands in agreement? How do we do that?
What is the motion again, Meredith? Can you stress the motion? State it.
The motion is to investigate the Blue Zones project as one of our goals under Health Reimagined to recommend to the SCAC workshop in March.
Investigation for viability. Yep, that's good. Okay, thank you.
So those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Anyone against? All right. So the next question is, who would like to work on this Blue Zones investigation as a subcommittee? Nicolette? Great. I can't, with my PowerPoint on, I can't see Patty. Great. Phil Susan. Mandeville? Phil and Susan?
Yeah.
Wonderful. Anyone else? Nicolette, Patty, Phil, and Susan?
I'll sit in on the committee. I'm not a member of this committee. You know, I'm the overall. So, yeah. But I would love to sit in on that. I think Blue Zone is amazing.
Me too.
Okay, great. Barbara too?
I have a question.
Okay. Yes.
What about, because I see here at the caregiving that works. Is that either or Blue Zone or the other caregiving network?
In my opinion, we should be hitting both of our two master plan areas. One is Health Reimagined.
Yes.
And Blue Zones goes under that. The other one is Caregiving That Works. And I believe that we should consider that as well separately.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, I do too.
I think that's a more practical, actually. Blue Zone is very lofty and it's a great thing, but we're faced right now with caregiving and caregivers and the life, the well-being of seniors today and into the future.
I don't think it's one or the other. I think we have the ability to do both.
So let's, if it's okay with everyone, let's move on to talking about caregiving that works. Is that all right?
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, so caregiving that works. Now remember, this is going to be both informal and formal caregivers. We heard Dr. Torres-Gill, for those that were on the SCAC meeting, talking about the caregiver shortage, who are the caregivers of the future, how do we get these caregivers, how do we fund it with a wage that attracts people to want to be caregivers.
Proper training,
oversight. A lot of seniors are not prepared, especially when they're frail, to be a supervisor of someone. So there's, you know, lots of things to consider. I just put something very simple, and that is to start with the Caregiver Resource Center for Orange County to find out from them what their gaps are and services and needs. But I would love to hear from other folks on our committee today. What should we consider for caregiving that works? How can we dig into that master plan goal for Orange County?
It'd be interesting to know how you qualify to become a caregiver. What is the actual process? How does one become a caregiver? Do they need to be licensed? What does that entail?
It depends.
Well, see, that's it. A lot of people probably don't know that it depends, which is not a good answer. That's why we have inconsistencies when things are, it depends, means the quality you're going to get, it depends.
Right. Well, absolutely.
I think we should have a standard wage for caregivers so that you can have implementation of knowledgeable individuals who want to take on this position instead of, oh, well, you know, somebody who just wants to do it to get a minimum wage job isn't.
Then how would we recommend that though to the Board of Supervisors? That's the rub that I keep trying to think of.
I don't think we can recommend that to the Board of Supervisors. Right. I think that's going to be a statewide type of initiative.
Yes.
And it would go through the state registry that pulls from those that are registered for in-home supportive services. So maybe we start with working with our county in-home supportive services group to establish, to identify what the qualifications are for caregivers, what kind of training is required. Perhaps we make recommendations to train that group better, because they're serving
Maybe we recommend that we go on contract status in Orange County, like other counties have, so that there's an agency that's overseeing the IHSS caregivers.
Well, I'm just going to say, you're going to have some form of enforcement or oversight, because I can see real quick that this is going to breed an underground economy. You're going to get people who want less than minimum wage because they want some money. They'll do it, and they don't have their credentials, but they'll do it. And there are people who say, okay, fine, let them do it. I don't want to pay that high dollar person.
And we have to remember, we have three groups of people too.
Going on.
We have IHSS, so that's one group of people. We have people that can afford private pay, and we have all the people stuck in the middle. Mm-hmm. So Nicolette, I see your hands up.
Yeah, the other thing to consider in with the idea of caregivers is, are there living arrangements that can be created sort of communal, not just about the caregiver, it's the person themselves, but maybe communal living arrangements that we could investigate that might allow sharing of caregivers. So kind of building onto that, I see that happening more and more in Europe, and that, you know, not necessarily a comprehensive assisted living community or memory care community, but
affordable housing is one place that we do this.
Exactly, right? Where we could actually have just people living in an area that have those similar needs, and then have those caregivers that we're identifying with those skills and with that dollar amount being available in those types of settings that are not maybe as formal as an assisted living setting.
And what would be our recommendation like in that kind of a situation to the Board of Supervisors?
I think that's what that would be something I recommend we investigate further.
Look at that.
What is that? Is there a way in which we can create space where we can open up a housing space that would allow for that type of a setting?
Well, doesn't the state have that now with what they call six-pack housing? We have it here in Orange County.
Six bed homes, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Six residential care homes. Uh-huh. Those are licensed homes where people pay privately for mm-hmm. caregivers. Yes, this I'm talking about something larger than that. I'm talking about something that doesn't fit into that particular category and that might not be licensed by the state, but the people rendering the care would be licensed by the state potentially.
Right. And so instead of a caregiver having to go to everyone's house for 3 hours, which is typically the minimum, they could go to an area where there lots of older adults are living and spend 1 hour if that's only what's needed for some person and then move on to the next person. So it's more economical and also good for caregivers that don't need to be traveling around.
Yes.
If you're going to register, if you're going to register a caregiver, it should be by the city, not by the state, not by the county, et cetera, because they might have different needs and services by city.
Irene, I see that your hand is up as well. You're on mute.
Yes, as you were talking about the caregivers, I was also thinking of in-home supportive services. I do know there's a lot of clients or a lot of seniors who go through that to get some caregiving support. And I do know there is a listing, but I have also heard how individuals have a very hard time trying to find a caregiver through that. And thinking about organizing individuals according to where they live, like that might be an option of like expanding that database to include, you know, more specific information, at least a zip code about a caregiver. That way, you know, one caregiver could help multiple IHSS participants who are looking for one. So it's just, it's more, more specific to a program, but it's also targeting a certain number of individuals. And maybe that may be more attainable to work, whether it's the Board of Supervisors or the county to help with that. As like a step.
Well, we have housing navigators. That's like a new role that's happening. I'm wondering if we want to think about caregiving navigators, because that's a big part of the problem is that you don't know where to start.
So Office on Aging does have a database form for for-profit in-home caregivers on the Office on Aging's. And it was just updated this past year. But these are for-profit agencies that have minimum hours to no hours, and what the fees vary from $15 or $16 per hour up to $500 or $600 an hour, depending on the level of care.
Right.
So that's for-profit agencies that are already on our database. And I think the Orange County Social Services, who covers the in-home supportive services, has a registry of the participants who can try to send people, but there is a shortage of those individuals on that website, on that organization. So, you know, that's the challenge of what Meredith was saying is the what the individual can afford or not afford. It's usually the lower end of the spectrum and the people that are more well off or had planned for aging in place, now they have the means to get covered by the for-profit agencies, but there's the people that didn't plan, but they were the middle class. Now they're finding that it's, you know, becoming more challenging to find the individual that they're falling through the cracks.
Linda Cardoza?
Yeah, you know, you said something a little bit earlier. One of the things we run across whenever we're working with clients and individuals is even though there might be a database of caregivers and providers of those services, it's how do they select? So when you said earlier about caregiving navigators, there's not an organization where somebody can go and say, this is what I need. Can you help me without having a profit intent, you know? So that's actually a good idea. And I agree, because I've been through this myself, just trying to find a caregiver, identifying them, and then are they the right ones? Do they have the right services? And then it gets into the individual caregivers. Are they trained to do whatever? So I think when you were talking about the three sections, I think that makes the most amount of sense. IHSS is different. You've got to be a Medi-Cal recipient to get that. Whereas then if you're out in the open market and you're paying out of pocket, that's different and there's different levels. And that's one of the hardest things is how does one go about identifying a caregiver provider?
Right.
And there isn't a resource right now that'll help with that.
Yeah, I know that if you look at like South Orange County Moms, Patty is on a lot of these websites. I'm sure others of you are too. People are constantly asking, where do I turn for help for my older adult relatives? How am I going to handle this? And the folks that are above that Medi-Cal limit but don't have wealth, and especially if they're renters and paying a high proportion of their Social Security and rent, they're really stuck right now. So
I can only imagine the liability involved in that too. If someone says, yeah, I'd recommend this group or this person, and something bad happens. So, you know, this is fraught with issues. Doesn't mean we stop. It just means that we got to make sure we flush everything out.
And we also haven't even talked about all the family caregivers that receive IHSS. Right. I don't know how many times I've been to someone's apartment through my Work at Life steps, and they're both sitting there watching Wheel of Fortune. And you really can't supervise your grandson, who is your IHSS worker. So it's tough.
I have a question for Linda Cardoza. What if there was legislation nationwide, because this is a national issue, to incorporate that in Medicare, to have someone fund caregiving, whether it's local or even statewide, and have that as part of the Medicare program?
Yeah, I think you might see it part of Medicaid before you would see it part of Medicare. And, you know, I just have right in front of me, I have the MPA right in front of me, and I'm looking at this particular goal, and there are quite a few initiatives under the goal. So when I look at the five bold goals, we're looking at two goals, which is huge. And then there's strategies under each of those goals. And then there's initiatives. The one for Health Reimagines a lot worse than the caregiving one. But is there any intent to tie back to some of these? Because the target for this particular goal at the state level is 1 million high quality direct care jobs. So then if you translate it to what we want to do here in Orange County, is it increasing the quality and the quantity of caregivers? And if that's the case, how do we come up with a recommendation that's around that? Because then if you look at these individual initiatives, it does go into training and, you know, how to identify the folks, how to train them, what's going to be appropriate, how do you identify the pipeline? So this could be kind of huge. And then where do you stop? Do you go into each of the segments you were talking about, or do we just focus on one?
Linda?
Yes.
I have a follow-up question. What if we tie the university school of nursing into a short-term training for caregivers? The people would be in the program, and you know, they want to be nurses, and caregiving is part of that component. So it's a fix that could happen, and we could be sure of the intent of the students, just like interns.
That's an interesting thought. I can tell you from personal experience dealing with one of the providers here in Orange County to get caregiving for my mother. Some of the caregivers they had were actually college students. So when you talk about somebody that's been a CNA and is now doing caregiving, the skill set and the abilities are quite a bit different than someone that is just learning in school. It's definitely a thought. I'd leave it up to Meredith and the team.
Well, I think it's a good time for us to kind of see who would like to be on the subcommittee, Caregiving That Works. We've had a really good starting conversation, but we do need to have a group of three or four people that would like to dig into this. And we can kind of talk maybe next time and the time after that about framing and fine tuning as a whole group before we get into spending a lot of time writing anything up. Do I have any volunteers for working on Caregiving That Works? Barbara, great.
Along with some other people.
Yeah, it can't just be Barbara. Who else? I can't see everyone. Who is that?
Anne,
great. Excellent. Anyone else on caregiving that works? All right. I think that it's a big, big topic for sure. And I think, Linda, you posed some good questions. How do we want to split it? So this is the next slide. So we'll have members working on these goals. So we kind of have some starting subcommittees. And then, you know, with this new framework, we need guest speakers that will expound on the topics within these goals. So we've been having a lot of interesting guest speakers, but how are we going to fine tune our guest speakers? You know, we already have some scheduled, but when we book them for next year, for example, we need to be thinking about guest speakers that are going to inform our committee so that we can have more thoughtful process on our goals. And then I was just thinking about written one-page reports. It sounds like we might need to have them longer, but produced by February so that we're ready for the March committee and work group. I think that's all I had. Yes, it is. I'll stop sharing. Any other thoughts on how this is kind of rolling out? What can we do between now and our next meeting? Are the subcommittees willing to set up your own times and meet before we get together again and do some research?
I think you should pick a leader in each and then have the leader and a vice leader and type of thing.
And I would say, don't get overwhelmed, folks. No, all you really need to do is just kind of scratch the surface. What are we looking at here? So don't knock yourself out thinking, oh man, I'm going to spend hours of research. Don't do that at all. Just do some very basic stuff, which will lead to further discussion down the road. So yeah, this is not going to be, you know, we don't expect to give up the rest of your life and do this.
No. And as you're researching, if you find interesting people that can inform us about how we could make this work as a recommendation in Orange right. County, we can book them for our upcoming meetings. We can have up yep. to two speakers a meeting. That's fine.
Yeah.
So Nicolette, thank you so much. Nicolette has offered to switch subcommittees. So I'm going to take you up on that, Nicolette, so that you can move from blue zones to caregiving that works. So out of blue zones, we have Patty, Phil, and Susan. Who would like to take the lead?
This has got Phil written all over it.
You're so bad, Gene. Like, I don't have anything to do. I'm going to start making arrests and bringing them to your jail.
There you go.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay, thank you. So you'll get together with Patty and Susan, and Gene would like to be invited as well.
Yeah, you're going to send us an email with the committees and you know what to do.
Yeah, and then so Nicolette, Anne, and Barbara, who would like to take the lead for caregiving that works?
I really don't know if I'm qualified to take the lead on it, but I'm definitely willing to work on it. I must tell you, when we at our whole meeting, when Dr. how many people on the Zoom session want their children or grandchildren right. to grow up to become caregivers, there was not one taker. So right. that was pretty heavy duty.
No, it really was. It really was, because it's not a livable situation if you're a caregiver right now.
Right. Yeah.
And it's really hard, important work.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because I think, Barbara, what happens is caregiving starts with a family member first until they realize that that's overwhelming and they don't have the skill set or the time to deal with it. Then they go looking, and that's when they run into the brick wall. Oh my gosh, who else can do this? Yeah. It can be devastating to families. I've seen it where they try to do it within, and then they feel guilty when they have to give it up and say, I just can't do it. Either physically they can't do it or skill-wise. So good point.
And after this pandemic and the nursing home experience, fewer people are willing to take that route. So that makes this caregiving question of home care that much more pressing. Margaret, you have your hand up.
Well, I just want to share that, in the community, I was just having a dinner with a friend, and she worked in one of these, big corporation, I guess assisted living or places, and she was working and she was on the night shift. Because she's an immigrant, doesn't have a high school degree in America, so she was working for $15-$16 an hour on the night shift, responsible for 25 patients. And then she told her supervisor that other people were not doing their job, and she got fired and after working in a place for a couple of years. And so she was unemployed for a couple of weeks, you know, a month or two. And then she found another one at South County, one of those luxury senior living places. And now she's working there and she's still getting $15, $16 an hour, but now she's on the day shift. She gets 10 patients. And she just told me yesterday she has worked 100 hours last week, 100 hours. I'm just saying, so short and so needed. And I have another dear friend, a nurse practitioner. Her mother refuses at the age of 92, goes to one of the senior facilities. So she is blessed that her husband left her money and she is paying around the clock $260,000 a year to have somebody from an agency to come for companionship and care in Torrance, $260,000 a year. I'm just telling you the wide range of care deficits. And, you know, when I see a community member, they have a daughter, and I said, you're so blessed. You know, most caregiving are the loving daughters. And there's such shortage of caregivers, and most people who are giving in the agents, I mean, local, big facilities, they're mostly don't have a high school degree. They can't speak English, cannot. And most of them are, you know, foreign born, and bless their heart, they're giving care. But I'm just saying without them, there's no care. The seniors do need care.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Who else is working on this with me?
I'll send out the email. It's going to be you, Anne, and Nicolette. Okay. And Dave Sullivan, you have your hand raised as well. But you're on mute. Dave?
I think he's had that hand up for an hour.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Gene will tell you that a city cannot supervise or have a system to supervise caregivers. Is that correct, Gene? I mean, you could do something through the business tax, but you eventually would be sued by one of the
much that falls on the state's job, and that's what the cities would defer to.
Right. And I think one thing that I see missing in this is something we can do through our own cities and getting assistance from our senior centers, and that is to identify the gaps in service. The areas where there's gaps in service, because to me that's fundamental to know that before doing some of this less specific stuff, let's say.
I agree. I think that if I was on the caregiving subcommittee, I would suggest, and you know, for those of you that are, talk to the Caregiver Resource Center and you know, interview them and see what they say. They'll have ideas about how they could do more with more resources, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think you're going to see this divided up real quick between those that have and those that don't. If you come from a community that's got money, they're going to be able to pay for caregivers. Those that are more economically pressed, they aren't. And I think that's where the real bulk of our problem is.
And Medi-Cal eligibility is a huge factor.
Yeah.
Because that's the IHSS group. And that benefit only comes if you have Medi-Cal without a share of cost. This has been a really great discussion. I'm excited. What else, any other thoughts before we move on to committee members being able to share? Any by the ways?
Good discussion. It's just depressing, but it's very good.
Well, but that's the problem. The problems can seem so huge that we can't tackle them, and they're just mental roadblocks. So we have to figure out what the big problem is, what little part of it we want to work on to make things better.
There you go. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
That's right. That's what we have to do. Otherwise, we can just give up our hands and think this is just too much.
Good point.
All right. So our presentation schedule, I was going to mention that briefly. We do have speakers for the rest of the year. So in August, we have RSVP from 10C coming to present. In September, skincare. In October, our own Linda Cardoza is going to be talking about Medicare, what's new in 2022. And then in November, we have Marco from the Office on Aging talking about information and referral and that navigation piece when people are looking for assistance. But like I said, if you have other presenters, as you start doing your research, we can definitely add them on. Anne?
I was going to talk about the caregivers. It was very difficult for us to find a caregiver for my mother.
Yeah.
You know, they want to sit in front of the television. Sure, my mom didn't need a lot of attention, but she wanted somebody that could cook. Well, you know, found somebody that could, she liked hot dogs. That was it. So I was over there trying to teach her how to cook. So, you know, they may have strength in one area, but maybe not in another area.
Sure.
And my husband just says, if we have somebody in here, and they get into the computer, well, we're ruined.
Right. That's that component of how our seniors and families supervising folks when maybe they haven't been familiar with supervising before, especially in that kind of a setting. So I think that that's an important aspect of it as well.
And Anne, you bring up a really good point as well. There's the difference between a companion and a caregiver and a cook.
Right.
And that's one of those things that people don't seem to understand either. And so when we look at just finding a companion, perhaps for our elder loved one, it isn't a caregiver because they are not companions. They are not conversationalists. They have not traveled the world. They're caregivers. They just want to help you walk, bathe you, change your sheets, things of that nature. So there's a lot of that really needs to be fleshed out. Even just what is the definition of a caregiver? So great point that you brought up.
Yeah. Eddie.
I have to exit a little bit early to get over to the Laguna Niguel Senior Committee, but I sent all of you information about the Turning Silver into Gold conference. I would certainly appreciate your help in publicizing it, sharing it with people, encouraging them to attend. It's really going to be fabulous. And the keynote speaker, if you don't know Maddie Dykewald, I encourage you to Google her because she's part of a team that is among the most dynamic of aging futurists that we have anywhere in the country. So we need your help to populate it. And if you have any questions, just shoot me an email and I'll be happy to help you. If you want hard copies of the invitation, I'll be glad to mail those to you if you'll email me your address. And the second thing is mark your calendars for November 5th. This will be an extremely important town hall meeting that will be the effective launch of the Master Plan for Aging in Orange County. It's called Mastering the Master Plan. We have right now 9 elected officials confirmed to be part of the town hall. And again, this will be a hybrid event where you can attend either by Zoom or at a senior center. The Irvine Senior Center will be the place where all the elected officials gather in person. So mark your calendars for the morning of November 5th as well. And I'll be sending more information as it becomes available. Fingers crossed, I think we will have someone from the highest levels of the California Department of Aging to be our keynote speaker for that.
Nice.
Yes.
Let's come Orange County strong. Let's promote it.
Indeed. So thank you very much. And everybody have a great day.
You too. Congratulations to you and Anne.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's right. Bye.
All right, well, we're almost done. I know our time is drawing near. Any other announcements or roundtable discussion from any committee members?
Yes, great meeting. Great meeting.
Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, well, now we're on to public matters. At this time, members of the public may address the council regarding any items within the subject jurisdiction, provided that no action is taken off agenda items unless authorized by law. I see that we have one member of the public here. Amal, do you have anything to share with us?
Amal, if you would like to speak, you could raise your hand and I'll unmute you.
Okay, I don't think so. Well, thank you so much, everyone. Yeah. Our next meeting is on August 18th.
Ambrose needs to be.
Oh, Ambrose, go ahead.
Yes, I go by Ambrose or KC. Anyway, I have not spoken up much because I don't know whether I am as a guest, whether I should or not. So I wait till
now's
the public section. First of all, I will make this short, but to give you a little bit more confidence, the answer I gave for the red blood cell lifespan is correct. It's 120 days, and it is according to the American Society of Hematology. Now, I did not want to contradict Dr. Trin. He gave a very good presentation. And it's easy to sometimes miss, you know, a few days on these things. So it's not a big deal. But for me, as a newcomer and a doctor, I do want you to know that I try to give accurate information. Okay, having said that, regarding the blue zone and all the discussions that we had previously, I just want to let you know that for the last 15 or 20 years, I've been giving lectures on health. And basically, health is not the mere absence of disease, but basically a well-being, a state of well-being, physical, mental, and spiritual. So all these factors, including sugar, antioxidants, sleep deprivation, toxins, exercise or lack of it, obesity, probiotics, for instance, intestinal health, which is a very hot topic these days, microbiome. These are factors that really affect health in its totality. And even cancer, it is a multifactorial disease and is not one or two factors. Certainly, sugar and obesity contribute to it. Mm-hmm. But think about the vegetarians. They eat a lot of carbohydrates. And of course, they try to eat the right kinds. So the blue zones, actually, for instance, in the Mediterranean area, the reason why they live longer than compared with the American diet, they have a lot of fruits and vegetables. They have olive oil, which is neutral and anti-inflammatory, whereas our vegetable oils, corn oil and soybean oils, all the others are inflammatory. So the central point of my lecture is that the basis of almost 90% of the diseases that I see in my clinic among patients, young and old, especially geriatrics patients, are due to inflammation. Mm. Inflammation, obviously, COVID is a source and other viruses, but the intestinal health or dysbiosis, when the gut biome is disrupted, that causes inflammation. When there is too much or not sufficient nutrient, too much, for instance, sugar, that's inflammatory. And not enough, for instance, vitamin D. So stress, obviously, support groups, and all the other factors. We can really present these factors and then recommend some of these that are actionable. Some of it may be political, so we don't obviously want to go into that. But then some are feasible. For instance, advocating the senior citizens pay more attention to the amount of vitamin D that they have.
We had a lecture on that a couple of months ago from Orange County's pharmacist. Yeah.
And the amount has to be quite a bit. And of course, that affects the teaching of it, education of it. So anyway, I'll be happy to be part of the Blue Zone Committee if it is open to me.
Otherwise, you just have to say that you want to join the subcommittee and then you are in.
Yeah, good. So hopefully I can contribute over there.
Wonderful, thank you so much.
Okay, that's all, thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, yeah,
we need you, doctor. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. This is terrific. And I will send out an email to everyone with your email addresses for each committee. And then I'll encourage you that didn't volunteer today to consider volunteering, especially since we need another person at caregiving that works. Mm-hmm. So don't want to put you on the spot, but please think about it if you haven't volunteered already. And our next meeting is August the 18th at 1 p.m. via Zoom again. And we are adjourned. Thank you so much, everyone, for a terrific conversation.
Meredith, I-